Kol mi sheyesh bo shlosh dvarim halalu, whoever has these three things, mitalmidav shel Avraham Avinu, is considered one of the students of Avraham Avinu. Ushlosh dvarim acherim, and three other characteristics, mitalmidav shel Bilam HaRasha, is one of the students of Bilam. Okay, what are the three characteristics? Ayin tova, which means literally a good eye. We'll explain exactly what that means. Ruach nemucha means a low spirit. The nefesh shefala, which seems to be almost the same thing. It also means nefesh shefala means a person who has a also low. No, not a low image, but this means it's a certain humbleness, right? A certain humbleness of the spirit, which seems to be almost the same thing as Ruach Nemucha. Okay, but we'll soon see the difference. So it says anyone that has those three things is me tell me that shall have Ramadan. If they have Ayin Ra and evil eye, and this is not the same thing as Ayin Hara, the Ruach Givoha, a lofty spirit, the nefesh rechava, and a broad soul, which also means it's a little bit different. We'll explain what it means when we get into the Rama. The person has those three attributes, mitalmidav shel Bilam HaRasha. These are the students of Bilam the Wicked. Okay. That is as far as we are going to go in the Mishnah at this point. All right, now let's take a look at how the Rama explains it. The Rambam says as follows. Ayin tova, a good eye. He says, we've explained many times that the concept of a good eye means a person who has midas ha'astakus. Midas ha'astakus means they have the attribute of being satisfied. The nefesh yafala. Nefesh yafala, what does it mean? A humble spirit. Actually, nefesh yafala would be humble spirit. Ruach memucha would mean a humble soul. So nefesh yafala says he has a hiras. As a hiras means a person who is removed from indulgence in the sexual. That's basically what it means. And the third is the is Ruach Nemucha, which is a humble soul. He says, Hiha Navi Yisera. This means great humility. Now he goes on to explain. He says, and the three opposing features are Charitzus Liknos Hamamon, a person who is zealous, is involved in running after money. Vehu ayin ra, that's considered a bad eye. Verov ataiva, and a person who is of a promiscuous nature, over involved in the sensual. Vehi nefesh rechava, and this means a person who has what Chazal call a broad spirit. And that's the second thing. Vagaiva, and haughtiness. Vehi ruach givala, and that means a haughty soul, a haughty spirit. He says, and these three attributes were the ones that are well known about Avraham Avinu, and therefore we say that anyone that has these attributes is from the students of Avraham, because it means he's following his way of life. And whoever has the three defects in opposition to these attributes, he is from the students of Bilam the Wicked. Since he follows his way of life, he's living according to his characteristics, and he says, now I'm going to explain the places that these attributes are mentioned and elaborate a little bit on what exactly they are. Okay. But the first thing we mentioned was that the students of Avraham Avinu, we understand. It sounds strange to speak about students of Bilam HaRasha. I mean, students of Bilam HaRasha. So we explained that that what is meant here is that that you have to understand what the prototype of Bilam HaRasha. Bilam HaRasha is a prototype, and Avraham Avinu is a prototype. And basically, it's not an isolated, Billum is not an isolated phenomenon. But Billum really represents the person who probably most of the people in our society would look up to. Because Billum was an intelligent man. He was not a fool. He was an advisor for kings. He was a person that was well respected. He reached the highest echelons of society in his day. He was intelligent. He was a person that had wealth, was wealthy, prosperous, and he was a person who was proud of himself, and the fact that he had attained a tremendously high position in terms of being world-renowned in his day. And his philosophy of life was very simple. He was into all the things that I would say that modern man really looks up to. He was into the sensual. He was into the running after power, fame. I mean, all the things that basically the society today looks up to. It's the Talmid of Shel Billum HaRasha. It's not an isolated phenomenon. The students of Billum HaRasha. Yeah, the students of Billum HaRasha are many. Are many. It's the person who, excuse me, many, many more Talmudim than Avraham Avinu. Person is the person who is, I would say, that the world today would call the successful man. The successful man. The one that people are interested in reading about. The Hollywood stars or the famous politicians. I mean, that's their philosophy. That's their way of life. What is better? Because he was recognized for his intellect. He was recognized for his intellect. He was an intelligent person, a deep thinker, and his ego wasn't simply that he was famous, but that he was famous and intelligent and had a life of luxury, a life in which he was capable of satisfying his instincts. And that's basically something that is a prototype of what man by nature, without any perfection, would look up to in a sophisticated way. Of course, to look up to a person who just involves himself in the sensual, I mean, people don't usually are more intelligent than that. But Billum represented an individual that was very sophisticated. And that's why Chazal placed him in juxtaposition to Avraham Avinu. Yes. Yeah, Avraham Avinu was well-respected, he was wealthy, exactly. But the difference, which doesn't appear perhaps too much on the surface, is a gap that cannot be bridged. The gap cannot be bridged between two personalities. Difference to Chok Mizrach and Marat. And that's what Chazal are investigating. Billum was so intelligent that he was capable of Nevuah. And even though the Nevuah was not brought on by his perfection, it was brought on because of a certain situation, but once he was under the influence of the Nevuah, he was able to perceive the highest things in metaphysical areas. The only difference between him and between a real Navi is that a real Navi attains his goal by virtue of his own perfection. So his mind, here you have a case of mind, where people think that we the Jewish people, we always respect minds. It's not true. It's not true. Billum was a great mind. Billum was no slouch when it came to intellect. He was able to, under the influence of Nevuah, he was able to perceive great philosophical depths that an ordinary person would not be able to perceive. But the moment the Nevuah ceased, the moment the Nevuah was gone, he reverted back to his own state. Because Yadus maintains that perfection can only come back through one way. That's through the individual himself. And even if a person would have the greatest knowledge, but if that knowledge was suddenly miraculously given to him by God, it would have no value. And as soon as it would cease, he'd revert back to his ordinary way of life, and his emotions would overpower him and be exactly where he was before. Perfection can only be attained through a difficult struggle with the self, where a person, inch by inch, is able to make advances and move his nature in line with what his perception of perfection is. But if it's suddenly given to him, even though he has the greatest intellect, he will lose it. He will lose it, and the knowledge, as long as the knowledge is not a part of his nature, it's an alien entity, he can't possibly perfect it. The Rambam's concept of Nevuah, as a matter of fact, if you look at the Torah, you'll see that whenever the Torah says that God related to Billum, it says, Vayikar, Elohim al Billum. Vayikar. The reason why it says Vayikar, Chazal point this out. Vayikar means a happening. It means that he was the one individual that, because of his situation, God related to him. He wasn't the only one, by the way. Lovan Harami as well. Lovan was a wicked person. Nobody would say that Lovan was on a high level. I mean, from the Torah describes him, from the way Chazal understand him. Nevertheless, Vayavo Lachina Lovan Bachaloma Laila. God related to Lovan. Why? Because that relationship was not an intrinsic relationship because of his status, but because he was intent on destroying Yaakov, so God related to him. That means God related to him as an object, not as a subject. That's the difference. And the relationship between God and Bilam was the same exact thing. Because of a specific situation, God related to him as an object. That's Vayikor Elokim El Bilam. Not as a subject. That's the difference. That's essentially the difference. But even if God relates to man as an object, he can have certain perceptions because his faculties are at God's disposal. But it's not something which he himself has attained. And that's the phenomenon of thought. I don't know how to resolve. The Rambam's concept was in the normal realm. Not because of various circumstances that occurred in the Torah. He's not referring to this kind of situation. He's referring to normal before. Normal before you're right. Person, God does not relate to a person unless it's on the level. But in the instances that are mentioned in the Torah, like by Avimelech and by Lavan and by Bilam, it was not because of their high level. It was a different kind of relationship. Chazal pointed this out. Something else. Now that's the concept of tefillah. That's the concept of tefillah, as a person could be mispalel. Why? Because when a person prays for the right thing, it means he channels his energy in the right direction. That raises him to a higher level. On the contrary, tefillah is a very important aspect of the yadus in terms of perfection. Because what does a person do when he's mispalel? If he's mispalel properly, it means he removes himself from all the nonsense that he's involved in, and he thinks about his true goals, and he directs his energy towards an attainment of his goals, and his request from God to assist him is really a direction and a clarification of his own goals. That raises a person to a higher level. It channels his energy in the proper area, and it makes him into a different person. Tefillah, that's the idea of tefillah. That's the true idea of tefillah. The Chazal say that, what is tefillah? The Derech Shalom wrote to Leilat Malif Nasa. That the way a person, that God should make me do tshuva, we know tshuva is bechira. God doesn't interfere with human bechira. It's one of the principles of Yadav. God never interferes with human bechira. That's why there was such a problem with Paro. How can the Pasuk say, Vayachbed Hashem es leiv Paro? God never interferes with bechira. So the answer is it's not an interference with bechira. Hashivein Avinu Sarasecha is an expression of the desire of what a person must turn to God for his ultimate desires. And when he does, what it does for the person is it clarifies his thoughts and channels his energies, and then God assists him in the sense that once a person's on a higher level, so we maintain, and this is an important idea in Yadav, and many people have a lot of trouble with it, but a very fundamental part of our faith is that HaKadosh Baruch Hu, God does not abandon any individual who searches for him and searches for the truth. That's expressed straight through the Torah. The Torah and the Zion, all the way through. The difference between our belief in that concept and between the belief of primitive people is that primitive people maintain in the back of their mind some kind of an idea of how that works. They have some kind of a primitive notion about the relationship between God and man. We have no concept about it. We do not know. We do not ascribe any kind of feelings, any kind of emotions, any kind of thing that we're familiar with in the way that God relates to man. There we say, Kilo machzor sani machzor sechem, v'lo dachechem z'rochon yom Hashem. We have zero concept in that area. We do not know. Because God is above anything that we can imagine in terms of our physical or psychological being. God's essence is far removed from any kind of ideas that we could have pertaining to ourselves or any kind of projection that people might try to do onto God. That's primitivism. That's idolatry of Avodah Zarah. But the fact that God does not abandon a person that seeks the truth and that seeks him, that's the Yesod and Adas. And the only thing is we do not attach any kind of understanding to that, any kind of framework, whereas primitive people attach some kind of a framework to, and they sense and they feel very comfortable with it, and they feel they know how it works. This is primitivism. This is a lot of thought. Yadus just says that it occurs. How it occurs is not an easy matter. It's not an easy matter to understand. It's something everybody wants to understand very much. But the way the Rambam says in the Mor Nevuchim, that a person likes to understand a lot of things. He has to realize that in order to understand them, he's dealing with the area of God and God's knowledge. That it's not something which he's going to be able to readily understand. The important thing he should know is that he should remove any kind of any kind of emotional and nonsensical attitude. But the concept that God doesn't abandon a person, that's just something else. So we say that a person who channels his energy in the proper direction, that he does have God's assistance in terms of arriving at certain truths. Shira, Dovid HaMelech Shira, Yasha Raglai Tachonu, along with those, they're all straight truths. Anybody that denies that is suffering in the whole concept of relationship between God and man. We don't know how it occurs. Nobody to come along and just give an explanation for how, when, where it works. We have no time. Okay, object means that God relates to the, if God relates to the person as an object, it would be as if God splits the sea. So you'll say there's a relationship between the sea and God. Yeah, there's a relationship, but it's a relationship, God's relationship to the sea is as an object. Okay? It's, even that, I mean, is not so, it's not simple like people understand. Chazal say that the splitting of the sea was really something that's programmed into the creation itself, not something that God just split sea. Yeah, but I'm just using it as an example. But the point is, God's relationship to all, I would say God's relationship to the universe. So the universe he relates to not as a subject, but as an object. Okay? But again, the terms that we use, you have to understand, are borrowed terms, but it's as close as we can get to depicting it. You have to understand that there's it's not an exact, muscle, but the idea, the nucleus is the idea to it. So it means that when God relates to another, like to Moshe Rabbeinu, he's not relating to him as an object. He's relating to him as a subject, which means that Moshe Rabbeinu has reached the level where he is capable of interrelating with God and understanding, capable of receiving God's ideas. This is a different level. That's a man as a subject, not as an object. Bilamos as an object. That's the difference between Bilamos, Melech, and Lavan, all those cases. The Rambam never meant in the Moan of Uchim to say that Lavan Arami reached Nevuah because he was on such a high level. That's not true. He was simply an object. Ordinary Nevuah, you're right. Ordinary Nevuah, that's what Rambam's talking about. Proper representation, Bilamos is a proper representation of what people, without any depth of understanding, just following their instinctual life, what they would consider as success and something to be envied, and what would be their goal in life. Bilam HaRasha represents that goal. Why the Rambam goes into the particulars? He says, the attributes of Avraham Avinu are mentioned in the Torah. And he goes on. He says, Histapkus is one of the three, if you remember. Histapkus means being satisfied. Being satisfied. What does it mean, being satisfied? He says, Hu Omro L'melech Sedom, Im Yichut V'atzroch Na'ovim Ekach Mikol HaShaloch, So what happened was that when Avraham Avinu helped Melech Sedom against the five kings, so he was successful, and Melech Sedom wanted to reimburse him. He said, after all, they were so successful that they had so much booty, so much soul, which they won from in the battle. So he wanted to give Avram part of it, still to save them. He just wanted to save them. So Avram said, no, I won't even take a shoestring from you. He says, well, so many I shot this from. He should say that I made Avram wealthy. Why? Because Avram realized that what happens to him as a person is not anymore an individual phenomenon. See, Avram Avinu, in all time, was an individual. Everything that occurred to him was simply as an individual. He had no other responsibility other than to himself. And that's where he worked out the ideas of Yahadus. That's where he saw through the fallacy of Avodah Zarah to the nth degree. And that's where he started to teach, and he developed a following, and he was simply working on an individual level. But the moment God appeared to Avram at the age of 75 and said, Lech lecha me'atzecha me'malatzecha me'beitzavicha, that meant that God took Avram out of the personal life, and he said, you are going to be something, an entity, that's going to be involved in building a structure that will be of benefit to the world, which is Klal Yisrael. So he became a different phenomenon. That was what Lech Lecha was. He realized that his role is very important, and if anyone would be able to take that role, it would be destructive. So therefore he says, if Melech Sedom, if he takes money from Melech Sedom, then people would say, Avram got wealthy in the battle and Melech Sedom made him wealthy. That would reduce his stature. That wouldn't serve his purpose in terms of the world. In terms of the world, his purpose was supposed to be that God made Avram wealthy. wealth of youth couldn't be related to a bustle of dawn, because that influence of people was important in his role as a model. But that was a specific thing for Avraham Avinu. Before God appeared to him, he was like a regular person. He was a yachid. But he recognized he wasn't a yachid anymore after the nevuah he received with Lech Lech. So he didn't want to jeopardize his position and his role. So the Rambam says, this is tachlis ha'satta. This is the height of satisfaction. Why? Because he says he turned away rechus rav. He turned away large sums of money. And it was coming to him. And he turned it away, and it didn't bother. Yes. Matter of fact, you don't see so much in Torah about his life before. And the reason is very simple. Because the Torah is really a book which teaches us about the Yashgacha. I mentioned once before. So the Yashgacha starts with Rafacha, and that's what it is. Matter of fact, after Chayat Torah, you don't see so much about his personal life again. Because as the Rav mentioned, that after Torah passed away, his role insofar as being one of the others ceased. And he went back to his personal life. He took him to that thing. So the Torah doesn't really go into individuals' lives only insofar as they related to the grand scheme of the Yashgacha. Yeah. There's no question about that. He was involved in ideas, and he had people that he taught. That, of course, that's part of life. I mean, that was his life as a yachid. He didn't need God to tell him to do that. That wasn't his mission. God didn't give him a mission to go and reach people. Reaching people is a natural part. If a person is engaged in studying and ideas, he needs people. He needs people. I mean, philosophers also need people. Why did Socrates want to choose death over expulsion from Athens? Because he said, without people, we can't live. So you have to have people who talk ideas. Anybody that's involved in ideas needs to have people, and there's no question about it that Avraham Avinu was the philosopher par excellence. I mean, he had a following, he had a large number of people that he influenced and that he discussed his ideas with, and that was his life. That was before. But later, he had to play a special role. Special role. God singled him out to play a role in the Yashgacha. In the Yashgacha, as far as well concerned. Certain individuals were singled out. Most people aren't. But he was singled out, and he knew he was playing a special role. Whatever the Torah tells us about Avraham. That's the whole concept of Avraham, what the Torah is telling us about Avraham. Okay, he wasn't a yachid anymore. All right, getting back there. So with the Rambam says that it's most difficult for a person. Of course, it's very easy for a person to look at how another individual turned down large sums of money. But for himself, it's a difficult thing to do. If a person can very easily obtain large sums of money, which are rightfully his, to simply walk away from them is a sign that this individual is not under the influence of the desire for money. So the Ram says, this is what we see, his midas ha'estakos. Midas ha'estakos. It means that for the slightest, it doesn't mean that Avraham Avinu disliked money, because you have people that are praised in the world in general that turn away money, and they consider money to be something which is an evil, some type of an evil. I'll show you instances of individuals give up all their wealth. This is not a perfection in the artist. This is a kind of a reaction. That's information, psychology of against the desire for money. This is a psychological phenomenon. Yeah, this does not maintain that any kind of perfection. That's not perfection. That's from a person that really desires money, and he's trying to overcome his desire, so he goes to the other extreme to show that he really doesn't care about money. That's not God. Avraham, if he knew, would really take the money. Because money can be used for a very good purpose, but if there's any reason, any rational reason to not to take it, if it's going to, in the slightest way, infringe upon his purpose of existence, he walks away without any problem. Because the money is simply something which is a good for him under certain circumstances, and under other circumstances, it's harmful. His decision about money is not based upon his desire for money. It's based upon his perfection and the proper purpose and function of money in his life. And therefore, he could take it when it's proper, and he can leave it, and there's no difference in his emotions whether he takes it or whether he leaves it. He's simply indifferent and is just following a course which leads him to the correct action. It's a different kind of attitude, basically. Histopkos does not mean a person that's satisfied. A person, look, everybody says they're satisfied. I'm satisfied with the way I am. It's not really. They may say they're satisfied, but the satisfaction is limited. There's a certain amount of satisfaction. But if they had the opportunity to become more satisfied, they would opt for that opportunity very quickly. The need to stop the fire from the field is different. It means it's a different quality. It means the way he looks at money is completely different. And it depends the decision. He's not a happier or less happy when he makes his decisions with regard to money, whether he attains it or whether he doesn't, is simply an outcome. But what he does is, in conformity with a certain purpose that he has in mind, a higher level purpose, and therefore it's not a problem for him. He doesn't need any Teresa's or Yates to turn away from the money. Simply this money has no value for me. That's it, period. So therefore he turns away from it. Easily, yes. I don't know if I may have mentioned once before the question of Avraham Avinu and the Akeda. It goes back to the question of Avraham Avinu and the Akeda. So what was the Akeda? The Akeda was Kachnos, Binchos, Yechikos, Yerahavtos, Yitchos. So, Bincho, every Chazal tell us that every way God phrased it, everyone was an emotion. Bincho, your son, Yechikos, your only son, Yerahavtos, which you love, Yechikos. Slowly to bring out every nuance of his emotional attachment, and until Yitzchak was the climax. But you could ask the question and say, look, what was so great about Avraham Avinu being much of a son? Oh, they did it all the time. So what was the godless? What was the greatness? That wasn't unique about Avraham. That was really the Nisayon. The Nisayon, the test, wasn't really the fact that it's true. He had this intellectual problem also. God said that he's going to keep Yitzchak and Kerala Chazorah, and now he says, Halei Lola, how's it possible? They were struggling with an intellectual question, but that wasn't really an assignment. An assignment was, Bincho, Yechidcho, Asher, Ahavto, Yitzchak. The attachment. Matter of fact, the Medrash says that when he took him up on the Akedah, that his eyes were flowing with tears, Zolgulin of Damas. He was in tremendous conflict with his emotional makeup, because he had great love for Yitzchak. Well, what's the answer? The answer is, an Oved Avodah Zarah could do it very easily. Why? Because it's a psychological phenomenon. In other words, his son is a son. The son represents a certain emotional satisfaction, but the imagined satisfaction that he has from appeasing the gods is greater than the emotional attachment that he has to his son. So therefore, it is not considered it's not a sacrifice. The truth of the matter is that their sacrifices are not sacrifices. But Avraham Avinu was a rational person. A rational person. He didn't perceive any kind of satisfaction that an Oved Avodah Zarah would. He was a rational person. He knew God doesn't need sacrifices. There was no benefit. There was no psychological primitive benefit in offering Yitzchak. So he just had one thing. The rational command, and on the other side, the powerful emotional attachment to his son. For him, it wasn't a sign. For that person, it wasn't a sign. For a rational being, it's an assignment. For an irrational being, it's known as science. The person does the exact same thing, and the reason why they do it is simply because the emotions are more powerful on one side than the other. Okay? And that's what you have to understand whenever you study the perception of the others, the people of the Torah, that Avraham Avinu was not a person who was distorted psychologically. People throw money away, but that's a sickness. That's psychological distortion. Avraham Avinu was a normal individual. He was an individual who had a normal psyche and who had a great mind, and who simply followed his ideas and brought his emotions in line with his ideas of reality. For such a person, it's a big sign, because to turn away money is not a normal thing. It's out of the realm of the normal. Nobody would do it. You'll tell me he was very wealthy, but the fact is, only people who are not wealthy think that when they will be wealthy, they will give away money. But the experiment always proves that once they become wealthy, they become more attached. Certainly as much as the taxes they were to the money before. It's a psychological phenomenon. What is the Islam all say? Mishiyesh lo money roi to Messiah. Oyez kesef lo yizbat kesef. It's impossible. It's a fantasy. And I explained it once. The reason why people give away money before they have it is because money that you don't have, you can always give away. That's the rule. Money that you have. So and it's true. And it's true with Balei Tzedakah. A person gets tzedakah when he's making $30,000 a year, or gets tzedakah when he's making $1 million. So that's just a fantasy to say that he had enough money. There's no such thing as having enough money. There are people out there that have hundreds of millions of dollars, and they're out there working just as hard as a person working for $40,000 a year. That's human nature. To deny it is just falling into the world of imagination. So if a person, I don't care if a person has $100 million and he turns away millions of dollars, that is godless. These people don't turn away money. Let me be sure of that. At any rate, he didn't want to take away from others, and he could do it because he felt this was not in line with his purpose. But others, he has no right to take away from other people's money. Yes. The ordinary motivation of shelo lishma is what you're talking about. That people do mitzvahs because of certain psychological, emotional satisfactions that they can. And in this society, I want you to know, that's really what is the prevalent attitude and the goals and the whole understanding of people in our society is based upon that. Everybody in our society is concerned about emotional fulfillment. That's the question. The question is, will I be emotionally fulfilled or will I not be emotionally fulfilled? And that's the barometer by which they, criterion by which they guide their lives. Yadis has a different idea. Yadis maintains, and in fact, I mentioned this to somebody last week. I said that it is true. I believe it's true that if a person lives the life of Torah, he has the most emotionally satisfying life. There's no question in my mind that it's so. Because, first of all, the knowledge of Torah, if a person has active knowledge of Torah, it affects him in every sphere of his life. It affects him in his family. It affects him in raising his children. It affects him in so many ways. I mean, it's hard to even mention. If a person has a home in which he's fortunate that his children study Torah, he has a relationship with his children. It doesn't matter what type of music the child likes. There's a relationship with the child on an essential level. It's a higher type of relationship. It's a closer relationship. His family, the way he raises his family, he learns to use his mind and be able to overcome the powerful instinctual forces of the moment that can cause tremendous destruction in relationships. He's a different kind of a person. He knows how to, even in the world of business, it's helpful because he knows his emotions, and most people don't. Even people who are successful businessmen, they play it by ear. They have a good ear, the ones that are successful. But they can never be equal to a person who has knowledge of himself and his emotions and can analyze his moves and know exactly when he should do what. It's a different kind of thing. It helps a person in every sphere of his life. There's no question about it. But I would still say that is not the reason for a person to keep yadis. That's not the reason for a person to keep yadis. The reason, what is the reason for a person to keep yadis? The real reason is because that's reality. That's the reason. Once a person sees that the life of Torah is the life, is the real life, he cannot say to himself, it's like Aristotle one time said, a person would never say, I'll be a child, even though a child's life is more fulfilling. He wouldn't give up his knowledge. No matter how painful it is, he wouldn't give it up. If a person wanted to be converted into an animal, he'll have total satisfaction, he never want to do it. Because his value of knowledge and ideas and reality will suffer. He would rather suffer than give up his intellect and his mind and his essence. And that is the real motivation for Yadav. Even though Yadav gives you all these brachas, the Torah gives all the brachas. Ram says, yeah, the brachas are just psyche. That's not the purpose of the brachas. A person who keeps Yadav is because he will not tolerate. He can't tolerate not living in reality. He cannot tolerate that kind of existence. That's the real motivation. And in such a motivation, he's not doing it for any kind of satisfaction or any kind of fulfillment. He's doing it because he has to do it. He must live in line with reality. And he can't fool himself. He can't live a false existence. He can't follow things that he knows are basically empty. He has to follow things that have true value. And that's the true motivation. And all the brachas in Torah are 100% true, not simply in times of the Torah. They're true in everyday life. The person that lives the life of Torah is heaped with brachas. He avoids the endless plagues of most people. What bothers most people. How much money they're making, their success, how their neighbors look at them, what their value is in society. All these things are nonsensical. He doesn't even think about these things. He gets up in the morning, he's concerned about ideas, about improving himself, about Chochmas Hashem. He derives unbelievable satisfaction out of studying and learning and gaining insight. And there is no satisfaction like that. Anyone that experiences that satisfaction knows that it's the highest form of enjoyment that a person can have. It's a high, tremendous high that a person can have in any type of activity that they may do. Nevertheless, in spite of the fact that this person has really, as a Torah says, a blessed existence, but the reason that he does it is not because of that. Not because of that. The reason that he does it is because that's reality. That's Avraham Avinu. That's why for Avraham Avinu, he didn't do it because of his ulterior. It wasn't done because of ulterior motives. And the person that's sinned, like you said, because of the ulterior motives, it's exactly what you mentioned before. That's because of the lowest law. And you know what the halacha says? The only reason why Lola Snow is tolerated is because it's bully, Maisie. If it would never be Maisie, it would be just about worthless. He says, Avo Zahiruso. What is Zahiruso? It means, Zahiruso means insofar as he abstains from indulgence in the sensual. So he says, and this is something which you have to realize. I mean, you know, when we talk about the Avos, the Torah gives us some a chance to gain some insight into the lives of the Avos, to grasp a glimpse of their lives. The Torah gives us the opportunity. You have to understand that even though it may be something we can't relate to on our level, but nevertheless, it's important that we know things that we can't relate to. Okay? And this is one of them. It talks about Avraham Avinu insofar as his removal from the sensual. So it says that when he went to Sara Mitzrayim, he says, Hinei no yadanti ki isha yafas marelat. He said he had to assess her because he was in danger that somebody may kidnap her. So he looked at her and he said, you are a beautiful woman. Now I know you're a beautiful woman. So Chazal say, now what does it mean? I mean, he's married to her for years. What does it mean? So it says, he says that, Shelo istakel b'tzurasa istakel shlemo. He never really observed her fully. Rag bayomahu. Only on that day. Zeu tachlis haziras. Yeah. So what does it mean, really? What does this mean? It sounds strange to us and far removed, and we can't even imagine such a thing. Okay, but what is the Torah telling us? The Torah is telling us an interesting thing. It's an interesting idea, Torah. What it means is apparently that there could be a relationship between the sexes, relationship between a male and female attraction that's based purely on the ideation, or almost purely on the ideation. Which is an interesting... No, because they had intercourse. So, but you see, the Yadus maintains that it's possible to have such a relationship that is based upon the male and the female character and the ideas that through the ideas that there could be such a kind of relationship. That's what Yadus saying. And that relationship was not just Avram and Sarah, but it was Yitzchak and Rivka, because by Rivka, he didn't even see her. Eliezer went to, and it was determined totally by her character and her personality, and the type of individual she was. Vayevieha Yitzchok Olala Sorimo Vatilo Leisha Vayeha Vela. And then he loved her, because it was based upon a higher kind of love. It was not the romantic and sensual that everyone is familiar with. And the same thing is true with Yaakov and Rachel, as I mentioned once before, because he worked for her for 7 years, and the pasuk says it seemed like a few days. Now, how is it possible for a man who's romantically involved 7 years to work for somebody when it seemed like 50 years, 100 years, 1,000 years? But for him, it was like a few days. Why? Because it wasn't because of the passion, the physical, sensual passion. It was a value. He valued her so much that 7 years was like nothing, because she was worth so much more. Different kind of, the Torah shows us in all three instances, a different kind of relationship. It's possible that such a relationship exists. And I mentioned last time also by Hagar, that when Sarah took Hagar and gave her to Avram, so she said to her, Ashrecha shezachisa leguf nati. Midabe beguf nati. It means that you have the opportunity to have a certain unique kind of relationship that hardly exists in the world of human relationships. That's what the Torah tells us. An interesting idea. Okay. Now he says like this. He says, and he says again, Vod Amal Hog Achashloch Neshif Chosech Vyad Achashul Atzol Beinayach Mora Shiloh Yelo Watson with Anegima. Okay. The Chankish Bishop Minnesota Garshan Yishmoel Achetim Noel Mintosach Rabba Vuhan Mizgal Heyed Hakosuv Shehera Beinav Al Yishmoel Avad. Remember it? Yeah. Vayera Hadovam Mo'od Beinay Avram Alo Dos Beno. It says when he had to chase out Hagar, that the Torah says he was upset about his son. He wasn't upset about the fact that he's losing another person to live with. Okay. Elu kula mosei azira. Because all these things show you are demonstrations of Avram's removal from the sensual. Removal from the sensual. You have to understand, when we say removal from the sensual, so to us it sounds like an asceticism, right? Asceticism. But it's not really true. Because you have to understand that What it means is, in the Torah, there's no such thing as an ascetic, really. No such thing as an ascetic. An ascetic is a person that's withholding enjoyment from himself. That is in a state of pain, basically, a state of psychological pain. In the Torah, there's no such thing. On the contrary, in the Torah, the Avraham Avinu was in the greatest state of enjoyment than the average person, because his energies were channeled to the higher part of his nature, to the more essential part of his nature, and to the more satisfying part of his nature. Not asceticism. Contrary. It's a choice that any person who would have such a choice before him would make if he was able to do it. Okay? He was able to do it. Okay. The Omnam, he says, however, on the Sanuso, his true humility, who Omnov Anochi Ofavaisa. Because Avraham Avinu said, I am dust and earth. Okay? Offer earth and dust. Offer Vaisa. Dust and ashes. Okay, good. All right. Now, I would just like to understand this last concept. Says by Avraham Avinu, he says, I know who you are. Dust and ashes. What does it mean, dust and ashes? Doesn't a person is dust and ashes? Do we really maintain that? That's so? A person is really, what does the prophet say in Tehillim? V'atachasreihu ma'atne Elohim. V'chovod v'hodor tachreihu. The prophet says that God made man a little lower than the angels. And he enveloped him in honor and dignity. So he clothed him in honor and dignity. So how could you say that man is off of Eifel? Okay, what kind of statement is this? Okay, off of Eifel, off of Eifel. Man is off of Eifel. Selim al-Kim is off of Eifel. How could you say something? What does it mean? Bali Musi used to say that the reason why a person has two pockets is in one pocket he has to say Vanochi Ofreifa, and the other pocket he has to say Bishmili Nivrola. Okay? Meaning to say that somehow or other you have to know when to use which emotion. Alright? Usually he always uses it in the wrong time. But it's not a philosophical answer. It's not a philosophical answer. Nice Musa idea, but it's not a philosophical answer. I'd like to understand philosophically. What does it mean that Avraham Avinu said Vanochi Ofreifa? Dust and ashes. What happened to the godless Adam? It's interesting. When you take a look at the pasuk I quoted before, "Vatchasreihu ma'atne Elohim," v'chovod v'hoda tachreihu. That's in Ches in Tilim, in Tilim Ches. So it says afterwards. It says, "Tamshilehu b'maisa yadecha." You made him to rule over the works of your hands. God made man a little lower than the angels, and he clothed him with honor and dignity. And he says to God, you made him rule over the actions of your hand, your handiwork. Kol shata tachas raglav. You've placed everything under his feet. You see, modern technology, there's no question anymore. I mean, total control of his environment, okay? Everything. Tzona v'alofim kulam, bamo sodai, the animal kingdom, tipo shamayim, the gei hayom, he can affect everything. The birds, the ocean, any creature he can affect, he can subdue his environment totally. That's what the prophet says. That's what man is capable of. Okay? So, on the contrary, that's greatness of man. You see, no other creature can do this. But yet, if you look carefully, in the previous pasuk, he says, Ki era shamecha, and it's strange. Both concepts are here, opposite concepts, from one pasuk to the next. Pasuk Dalet, he says, Ki era shamecha, ma'aseh sotecha, when I look at your heavens, the work of your handiwork, work of your hands, yoreach v'chalchov ma'aseh kononto, and I see the moon and the stars, the celestial bodies that you've established, Mo'enos Kisis Kareno. So I think to myself, who is man that you should remember him? Uveno Dom Kisis Kareno, the son of man, that you should have any concern about him. So here he says that man is worthless. Because when he gazes at the heavens, he says he sees that he's worthless. But the very next pasuk is, Vatchasreihu Ma'at Me'elohim, that you made him a little lower than the angels. An unbelievable contradiction. I mean, the transition from one pasuk to another is almost unintelligible. Okay? Yeah. The first pasuk is a relationship between man and God. When man begins to understand God's knowledge, so he sees that he is nothing. Because he can't scratch the surface. He's in terms of his knowledge, he's almost nothing. Nil. Mo'enos kisis kareno. But strangely enough, in spite of that, relative to the creation, he is something. Relative to the creation, you can't deny that man, insofar as the earth is concerned, insofar as his environment is concerned, is a unique creature. infrequent. One philosopher put it very well. He said like this. He says, it's amazing how little we know. The scientist. Amazing how little we know, and it's even more amazing how much we can do with how little we know. That's Kamshileo that God gave man the ability to be a ruler over his over God's handiwork. And in spite of the fact that when man thinks in terms of ultimate knowledge, the greatest thinkers see that the tools that they're using are so crude compared to the, like Einstein says, compared to what nature, what the universe demands. But nevertheless, for some odd reason, man is capable, with the little bit that he knows, to control his environment and to achieve a certain status. So relative to the creation, he has a certain status. Relative to the ultimate, to God, he's nil. He's nothing. Minus Jesus Christ. Both things are true. That's what David HaMelech says. That's why he has those tzukim just above. Okay? Now the question is, what is Ranochi Afareifa? Where does that fit in? Okay? Where does Ranochi Afareifa fit in? That's the question. It seems to me that Moenos Kisiskereno is not the same thing as Ranochi Afareifa. As a matter of fact, Chazal say that there were three people who represent Anis, represent humility. And the three are Moshe Rabbeinu, so Avram Avinu said, "Vanochi Afaveifa." Moshe Rabbeinu said, "Moshe and Aaron said, Vanachnu Mo, we're nothing. It's even less. We're nothing. We're not even Afaveifa." And David HaMelech said, "Avanochi Tolas Veloish. I'm a worm and not a human being." So Chazal say that David HaMelech was the lowest because he perceived himself at least as an animate object, and Avram Avinu was next because he perceived himself as an inanimate. But Moshe and Aaron were highest because they said, "Ma, what are we? We're nothing. Zero." Okay. So if, but I want to bring a rightness. If Moenosh Kisiskerenu is when okay off of Eva, so why didn't they say David Melch said Moenosh Kisiskerenu? This was miserable David? Right? Why didn't they say Moen? So apparently Moenosh Kisiskerenu and Venochi off of Eva is not the same thing. Alright. What is different between these two things? What's the difference? I think it has to do with the concept of Avas Hashem. But in order to understand Avas Hashem, you have to understand man, and that takes us back to the creation of Adam Arishon. And in the Torah, you have a depiction of Adam Arishon. You have a depiction of Adam Arishon Kodam Achet and Liachar Achet. Okay, before he sinned and after he sinned. Now, if I would ask you to tell me, what would you say in terms of man's function? The difference is before he sins and after he sins. What is the difference? What would you say? The most glaring difference in Adam, before, in terms of his function, before he sins and after he sins. What's the difference? What function? How do you change functionally from before the chait and after the chait? But the function, in function, the difference is very simple.
Before he sinned,
he never thought about himself. After he sinned, he thought about himself. That's the difference. Before he sinned, he was involved purely in chachma. That God brought the animals before him. He was classifying. He was studying the creation. He was involved in thinking. He was involved in organization, in understanding, in uncovery, discovery. But what happened after he sinned? He started thinking about himself. Vayira, I was afraid. Ki'era manochi, I was naked. Vayichave, he started thinking about himself. He's naked, he's this. Whatever concerns he had about it, he was a chote, he was a sinner, he started to be concerned with himself. That was the difference. Before the chait, he didn't think about himself. After the chait, he thought about himself. That's the essential difference. He had to think about himself. And from then on, he's had problems. What I want to say is like this, that because of that, because of the chait, it became impossible. I would say like this, that the whole purpose of Torah is to bring a person to the highest kind of existence, which means to try in some way to recover what he lost. Kodem HaChait? I mean, that's what it means, because he was in the highest level. So, therefore, what you'd have to say is that a person, the more perfected a person is, the less involved he's going to be in thinking about himself. Which is true. Moshe Rabbeinu was involved in Marian Avor for 40 days and 40 nights. He didn't think about himself at all, not even insofar as his physical needs are concerned. The highest, the more, of course, that was Derech Neis. I mean, I'm just saying, it shows, it exemplifies the perfection, the highest level of perfection, possible, attainable. But it means the more a person, the higher the level of a person, the less he's reflecting upon himself, and the more involved he is in Chachmas Hashem. The more removed he is from himself. But, it's impossible for any individual to be totally removed from himself after the Chait of Adam Arishon. It's impossible. Now, the Rambam gives a description of Avas Hashem. So the Rambam gives a description. The Rambam says, what is Avas Hashem? When a person realizes God's infinite Chachma, his infinite wisdom, and he's moved by his vision of God's Chachma, so he says that the moment this happens, he says, first he's overcome with a tremendous desire to increase, to get closer to God, to understand more of his knowledge. He says, but then he suddenly becomes fearful, and he knows that he's a small creature, shvela, low, afela, dark, that is standing with a very thin kind of knowledge, frail kind of knowledge, before God of total perfection. So, yeah, that experience is something which is great scientists have. That's true. But why does he have to reflect upon himself that he's a shvela, shvela, afela? Why is that necessary? The first part I understand. First part is he's involved in God's Chachma, and he's drawn to it. Just like on a human scale, if a person would be attracted to the mind of a great thinker, so he'd want to be with that thinker, he'd want to be attracted to that person, he'd want to meet that person. So over here, it's between man and God, he would like to get closer to God, he's attracted to God. That's Avas Hashem. That's understandable. But why does he have to think that he's a Briya Shvela Vafela, Omei Bidas Muta, he's a small, lowly creature? Why? What's the answer? The answer is because man after the chait must reflect upon himself. He must reflect upon himself. That became part of his nature. But when he reflects upon himself, you see, what happens is the result, what comes out, is completely the opposite of what the results are of a person who's involved in the self. The result of a person who's involved in the self, when he thinks about himself, he thinks he has great qualities, and he's successful, and he's respected, and he's somebody that's very worthwhile, and all the attributes that the psychologists try to tell a person is very healthy for him, he conjures up in his mind. But the thinker, the true philosopher, true thinker, on the contrary, he comes out with the exact opposite. He sees a frightening experience. He's Briya Shvela Vafela, Omei Bidas Muta Lefnei Tam Deos, a low creature, dark. He has a very frail mind, and he's standing here before the ultimate perfection, trying whatever he can with his crude techniques to unravel and uncover the ideas of the universe. That is It's a reflection upon the self, you see. And it stems from the desire to reflect upon the self, which was after the Chet of Adam HaRishon. I would say, before the Chet of Adam HaRishon, this would not be the depiction of Avos Hashem. This is the depiction of Avos Hashem after the Chet of Adam HaRishon, not before. Okay? So that it comes out like this. The part of man that wants to reflect upon the self. See, we maintain an interesting thing. Ayadus. Yadus maintains that man is not really a homogeneous integrated entity. He's not one thing. But he's made up of two things that are different in substance. Different in substance. That's why Chazal say man is a combination of a behemah and a malach. That's what it means, but that's what that Chazal means, a behemah and a malach. It means if you're trying to unify man and say man has emotions, he has a physical part to him, he has instinctual drives, he has an intellect. That's the way most people look at man. What is man? Let's take a look at his components. Take a look at his components. Yadus maintains that you can't view man in that way. Yadus maintains that's kfira. That really is part of the kfira of evolution. Of evolution. Evolution is basically intrinsically. I'm not going to go into whether, but the idea that is against her is that man is a more complicated animal. Because an animal isn't a unified entity. Yadus maintains that man has two parts to his nature that are completely unrelated almost. They're completely unrelated. They're different in substance. In the one hand, there's the psyche, his personality, his instinctual drives. But then somehow or other, he is capable of perceiving a world which is completely removed, which is just a world of thought and ideas. He could link into that world and have a totally different experience, different, what he sees is a different entity. That part of his nature is not to be related in any way. It's an alien, so to speak, alien to the other side of his nature. It's a different, it's a metaphysical entity. Just like the universe is not guided by physical laws, but is guided by something beyond the physical, and man is able to perceive that world, if there is something different in him that he could link up to, he's capable of tuning into that kind of a world. That kind of world. It's a metaphysical entity. It's what Aristotle called the divine element in man. It's what Plato called mind. And it's what Yadus calls the tselem elokim. It's a completely different sphere. Completely different sphere. Now what Yadus maintains is that man, he jumps from one to the other. One time, most people are in the world of the psychological and the physical and the spiritual. But occasionally, he's removed and he becomes part, he's able to perceive this other world. This other world is a completely different entity. So, there is man insofar as he's a perceiver of a different world, and there's man insofar as his nature, his psychological, physical nature is concerned. It's not one unified entity. That's an essential principle of Yadus. Now, my question is like this. Which part of man wants to reflect upon the self? Is it the part that partakes of the divine, the eternal, or is it the lower part of his nature? What's the answer? The part of his nature that's tuned into the Chochmas Elokim is not the part that's interested in reflecting upon the self. There's no concern about the self. When a person is involved in the world of ideas, the father's removed from his mind is what he is. He's attracted to something outside of himself. There's nothing to do with himself. The opposite direction. Okay? And the part that's attracted to the self, after he gets out of the world of ideas, then he says, how did I do? Did I understand? Then the whole thing starts all over again with the concern with the self, which is from the lower part of man, the psychological part of man, Okay? Strangely enough, that's why, by the way, happiness is never attained directly. It can never be attained directly. Why? Because people who want to attain happiness directly are really interested in the self. And happiness is really when the person is involved in something which is away from the self. So it's a catch-22. You could never get it.
How would you find happiness?
Now the question is, when Avraham Avinu says, "V'anochi Yofaveicha," which part of the mind does that come from? Which part of the mind does it come from? It comes from the lower part of the mind. Even by Avraham Avinu. Even by Avraham Avinu. By anybody. By anybody. Moshe Rabbeinu didn't reflect too much. Just when he came and started complaining to him, he said, "V'anach no more." He thought about it. Okay? What did he think about it for? He had to think about it, because they were complaining to him, as if he was his fault. So he said, "Just a minute, who am I?" He reflected. But that wasn't his preoccupation. By Avraham Avinu also was, he was when he asked God. Was it correct? When he asked God, V'anochaf Vefer? Was when he... Right. Because he didn't know also doubles in V'anochaf Vefer. Because who am I? He had to reflect upon who he is. What right does he have? V'anochaf Vefer. But the point is, the part of man that reflects upon the self is really the lower part of man. But the lower part of man, when it does the reflecting in the great Chacham, what happens is, when it does the reflecting in the great Chacham, that lower part, comes up with one conclusion. That the whole self, and the very source that is looking for what he is zero. The V'anochi Ofafe, you understand what I'm saying? When the lower part is what initiates the process. But when the process is initiated in a great person, what happens is he reflects not only upon the question, but upon the source of the question, and upon the self as a psychological and physical being, and he concludes that it's Ofafe. The Ofafe is not the part of man that is divine. Not the Tzelem Elokim. The Off of Eifer is the self insofar as the psychological being is concerned. The part that causes him to reflect upon what he is. That self is the Off of Eifer. The Off of Eifer is not the self that perceives Chachmas Hashem. The part that perceives Chachmas Hashem is not even construed as a self because it's completely removed from self. It is directed outwardly. There is no self over there. The V'anochi, the I, the self is only that part of man that man can perceive of itself. And that is man as he considers himself, as he envisions himself in terms of a physical and psychological being. As a physical and psychological creature, he recognizes he's off of, this is nothing. This is off of Afer. The off of Afer is the physical and psychological, not the Tzelem Elokim. That's the pshat in the pasuk V'anochi. V'anochi off of Afer. Is a reaction by the Chacham to a question that's posed to him from the lower part of his nature, which he must somehow cannot escape after the Chet of Adam and Rishon, no matter how great he is. Maybe by Moshe Rabbeinu was once in his life, by Avraham Avinu, I don't know how many times, but it's necessary for man to reflect upon himself once the Chet of Adam and Rishon occurs. But the Chacham will, even in Avas Hashem. But in Avas Hashem, at the simultaneous in Avas Hashem, you see, but then again, he has to think about what he is. There is an element of knowledge about the self, but the conclusion is, on the contrary, is Bria Shvela Vafela Omei B'das Melika. That's the self. So how would you compare Anochi Ofa V'Efer with Mo Enosh Kisiskerenu? How would you compare Anochi Ofa V'Efer with Mo Enosh Kisiskerenu? How would you compare the two? The answer is very simple. Mo Enosh Kisiskerenu is a universal. Is a universal. Anochi Yofa Vefer is a personal reaction. It's a personal reaction. That's the difference. Okay. Now, exactly. That's it. That whole parak in Ches is dealing in objective terms. Universal objective terms. That's why the Gemara never used that case to show David HaMelech's humility. It used the case of Anochi Tolas Lo Ish. That's the personal. V'anachnu Ma is the personal. Okay. A person wants to know what his intrinsic worth is. Yes, he had the content. That's after the fate of Adam Rishon, because he was endowed with a part of his nature that is constantly concerned with what he is, what his value is. It demands an answer. Relationship to God is some kind of relationship. Yes. So what the Rambam is saying is, even though he's in the throes of the comprehension of God's universe, he's going to assume he has to come to what his position is. He's going to have to reflect upon himself. Okay. By the way, I want you to understand, that's not a sad result when he says Briyash Fela Vafela. It's not a sad conclusion. It's a very happy conclusion. A person like that doesn't have any worries. He's happy to realize what he is in reality, and that realization gives him the greatest happiness and removes from him the greatest burdens and pains that people have in their everyday existence. It's a beautiful vision. It's not something that's painful. It'd be painful for a person that doesn't know what it is, has no concept of what we're talking about.